Rumpus time is over.
There's a new sheriff in town.
Luke's crazy.
Did you hear that, Brian?
Luke, we're gonna have company!
Brian! Bad guys of the galaxies, beware! The defender of the universe is here!
In order to form a more perfect union.
Luke! Brian!
Luke, Brian!
One margarita, two margarita, three margarita shot.
Stop that! You're not going into a song while I'm here.
And now for something completely different.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Talking Heads.
Hello and welcome to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. Here in Madison, broadcasting live from the Solidarity Realty Studios on Madison's Near West Side. For Mad Radio 92.7 FM, WMDX 1580 AM. And around the states, on a local Civic Media radio station near you, we got Evan on the board. E, how we doing on this Thursday afternoon?
I have the hope to go on.
Happy Intergalactic Star Wars Day to you, my friends.
I was going to say, you didn't talk about this yesterday.
Well, you know, why would I talk about it on May the 3rd?
Because you were sort of just going over the holidays.
Oh, yeah. See, it's a busy week. There's a lot of them going on to kick off May. Today, Intergalactic Star Wars Day. Happy May the 4th be with you all. And it's an interesting one here on Thursday. And, you know, we got a growing radio network here at Civic Media.
Say that again.
My head was in a lot of the wires, a lot of the programming side of things throughout the day, but I was lucky. Take a quick, brief, deep breath above the air, looked at the headlines, and was like, you know what? Let's do a show.
It's looking good. It's looking good out there.
I was a little concerned. No, not going to lie. I was a little worried. Hitting the deadline here of the 2 o'clock hour, but thrilled to be with you all. If you want to share a tangent with us on a Thursday afternoon, 844-967-2789. Coming up at 2:30, going to be joined by Annalise Einker, member of the Dane County Board, and just terrific all-around person. Annalise and I are going to be talking about the shared revenue proposal that was released this week. Some of the details still missing, but mostly it had its first public hearing, I believe, kicked off 10 a.m. this morning. I believe there was a delay, though, so sometime this morning, the first public hearing took place on the Republican proposal for shared revenue. We'll talk about that and the other headlines of the day with the legal case, the lawsuit beginning today for a challenge to the state's 174-year-old abortion ban that's going on here in Dane County. And we'll talk about that as well with Annalise Einker. But if you want to share a tangent with us in the meantime, 844-967-2789. And I'm curious, how much is too much? What is the tipping point for some things? Tipping points are an interesting thing to consider, in my opinion. I get the picture of, you've ever gone to the water parks? Have you ever partaken in the water park capital of the world? You head on up to the Wisconsin Dells.
Really the capital, huh? Yes, I have.
Yeah, and you know those, there's always one of these. It's kind of the focal point of a lot of water parks. But it's a giant bucket at the tower, and the bucket fills, and it fills, and it fills, and then it tips over, and then all the kids rush to get underneath because it's a lot of fun. You got the water flowing.
Like, oh, when's it going to fall? Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah.
And I'm curious to know where the tipping point is going to be for how the American public is taking the news that there is a rot at the center of the ethics that our U.S. Supreme Court justices have. There is just a tremendous rot. And this is something we've been talking about a lot. The ProPublica, about a month ago now, did an excellent piece, and we found out that Clarence Thomas had a friend, I argue, benefactor, because it's a little bit more than friendship. And conservatives have gone out and in the conservative judicial corners, the lawyers that have been, you know, arguing that, oh, well, what's a couple trips among friends? It's not a big deal that the member of the U.S. Supreme Court was going on super trips for yachts around Indonesia with Harlan Crow, a billionaire from the Dallas area. What's the big deal that Clarence Thomas spends a week up in the Adirondacks, northern upstate New York.
Transactions worth hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Oh, yeah. We've got to be in the millions of dollars now. It's not even just hundreds of thousands. I want to say one of the yacht trips, Evan, was $500,000. It was
$500,000.
Yeah. What's $500,000? Yeah. Time and time again, going up to this resort in the Adirondacks. What's the big deal that Clarence Thomas's mother's house down in Savannah, Georgia, is owned by Harlan Crowe? We don't know if she's paying rent. We don't know if Harlan Crowe is just comping that as well. We know that Clarence Thomas, on his tax forms the year that he sold the property to Harlan Crowe, did not disclose that Harlan Crowe was the buyer. That Crowe Holdings, or a subsidiary of Crowe Holdings, was the buyer of that property. He didn't actually care to indicate that the entire street down in Savannah, Georgia, where Clarence Thomas' mother lives, has been revived and renovated because Harlan Crowe's been buying up all the properties in that surrounding area and developing them or selling them off to other developers. We didn't know any of those details. And now, today, ProPublica coming out with just one more detail of their friendship, according to conservatives, E. And what's the big deal of covering tuition costs for somebody that Clarence Thomas was raising? Yes, not a biological son, but he raised him like a son.
Protégé,
he's
a, still, if you will.
No, still blood relative. It's his sister's grandson. It's his grandnephew. And Clarence Thomas, very much like his grandfather took him in, and Clarence Thomas will tell everyone. It is a big part of his life story. He was brought up by his grandfather. Very similar through the circumstances, Clarence Thomas helped raise his grandnephew. And he took him in, I believe, from about the age of 6. And Clarence Thomas's grandnephew, who he raised like a son, was going to a private school. But it wasn't Clarence Thomas that was paying the tuition.
That's icky. That's icky,
you
guys.
We now find out that Harlan Crowe, along with all of the luxury trips, along with the exclusive vacations, along with the purchasing of Clarence Thomas's mother's home in Savannah, Georgia, Harlan Crowe also flipped the bill for the tuition costs of upwards to $150,000 for Clarence Thomas's grandnephew.
I would just love to hear the justifications here.
Oh, well, he's not a biological son, Evan, so he doesn't have to report it.
That's
already the arguments that I've been seeing.
That does not address the issue at hand, right? That's a deflection.
Harlan Crowe is just a very generous man, Evan. Oh, he goes and pays random people's tuition all the time.
Hey, Harlan, man. Come on down.
Right?
Let's chat.
Right?
You know,
What is some tuition costs among friends, Evan? You're telling me you're not picking up the tuition costs for your closest friends?
No, but maybe Harlan can hook it up.
Maybe.
No?
This is the reporting, yeah. E. Over at ProPublica, again, the outlet that published the original findings of the relationship between Harlan Crowe and Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas had a child in private school. Harlan Crowe paid the tuition. Crowe paid for the private school for a relative Thomas said he was raising, quote, as a son. This was outside the norm, said a former White House ethics lawyer.
One way to put it. Yeah.
One way to put it.
Yeah.
But Evan, as we got in a letter last week, a letter from the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, saying, well, we're all signing that we are committed to our ethics. We will monitor ourselves. Thank you very much. I'm not going to come before the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you very much, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. I'm not interested. We're going to police ourselves.
It's like there's an intentionality behind erosion of trust in the court. Like they're really trying their hardest. Like, they're really giving it their best effort.
So my question is, what's the tipping point?
Yeah.
When do Americans get to the point where this is not an acceptable relationship that one of the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices has with a billionaire benefactor? Because they are not friends. Harlan Crowe is a benefactor. And that is what this relationship is. At what point are these stories going to continue to come out, and we are going to call for Clarence Thomas's resignation from the U.S. Supreme Court? Because I think we're at that point now. I think that Clarence Thomas has shown he will not recuse himself from how close a Supreme Court, a case before the Supreme Court is, because he was the one justice vote that did not vote to allow the Justice Department to receive the text messages around January 6th. Why? Ginny Thomas, Clarence Thomas's wife, was involved and had text messages included in that trove of documents. Clarence Thomas did not recuse himself from that. Harlan Crow has advocated that the eviction ban in place during the COVID-19 pandemic would hurt Crow Holdings. Clarence Thomas, his good buddy, didn't recuse himself from the cases overseeing that core argument.
And Alito has a good idea of who the leaker is.
Alito has a good, yeah.
He's got a good idea.
We still don't know who leaked the draft opinion to the Dobbs decision last summer either. That is an excellent question that we should get to as well. And Congress should be investigating that. It cannot be just the justices left to their own devices. So what is the tipping point? When are we going to get angry? Because it took the American public getting very angry at the Richard Nixon administration and Watergate for Nixon to resign. It took public outrage for in 1969 for then Supreme Court Justice Abe Fortas to resign. When are we going to hit that tipping point? When are we going to experience the bucket filling up of all of these stories of ethical rot at the center of the U.S. Supreme Court, with Clarence Thomas being involved in almost all of them? Obviously, Neil Gorsuch and John Roberts have had their own as well. I want to know what you think the tipping point is. 844-967-2789. This is Dueling Tangents. We're talking U.S. Supreme Court ethics, as well as some more Wisconsin headlines. We're going to be joined by Annalise Eicher, member of the Dane County Board of Supervisors, coming up talking shared revenue, as well as some other headlines. Share your tangents with me on this Thursday afternoon. 844-967-2789. Dueling Tangents is going to be right back.
We have clearance, Clarence.
$1 million.
It's no big deal.
Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers. You're listening to Dueling Tangents across civic media here in Madison, Mad Radio 92.7, The Shaw and Waukesha, and so many more terrific civic media radio stations around the state of Wisconsin. If you want to keep up with what we're doing here as a growing radio network, check out the website, civicmedia.us. You can learn more. And we're talking the rot that is going on right now at the U.S. Supreme Court, the ethical violations that seemingly are going to go unchecked. The U.S. Supreme Court has said, we'll handle this in-house. We'll take care of this in our own ways. And yet, just story after story after story coming out about questionable ethics on the nation's highest court. Questionable at best. I think it's just outwardly terrible ethics. It's bad ethical practice to accept these monetary gifts and not disclose them. And in this case of Harlan Crow now picking up the tuition costs for the grandnephew of Clarence Thomas, he did disclose other gifts. Again, it's the same nature. He disclosed a little bit and then realized, ooh, maybe I don't want to disclose this one. So knowing that shows that, yes, he would disclose some things, but not all of them, because he knew the optics were bad.
Consciousness of guilt, if
yes.
You will.
Yes, Evan. And so it is absolutely, there was a $5,000 gift made by another one of Clarence Thomas's quote-unquote friends, and Clarence Thomas disclosed that one. It's for tuition costs. That $5,000 got disclosed. The upwards of, we don't know the true numbers of how much Harlan Crow has flipped the bill for the tuition, But the ProPublica reporting indicates it may be in the vicinity of $150,000. It's a hell of a friend if you can find one like that. Hell of a friend if you can find one like that.
Real nice friend.
Want to hear your thoughts. 844-967-2789. We got Mark from Priority Stack calling in. Mark, what's on your mind this Thursday afternoon?
Well, more than 30 years ago when I was working, one of my jobs working for the DNR was processing the bulk fuel purchases. And for a couple of years, one of the vendors was sending me a basket of cheer because I was their contact with them. That was kind of standard practice for them, for their bigger customers, to send that kind of thing out. But I knew even back then I shouldn't be accepting that. And as personally accepting that, and that how these guys even justify accepting any of this stuff in the first place is they're in a position of trust, and they shouldn't be accepting any gifts at all. You see, I just can't take that right now because it's against the ethics code for state employees to accept gifts like that from customers, et cetera. So why these guys think they should be able to accept that kind of thing is simply beyond me. We got Brett Kavanaugh, who we still don't know.
We don't know who forgave his debts. We never got a conclusion to the FBI investigation into it. They rushed through the Trump administration and the Republican-led U.S. Senate rushed through all of Donald Trump's appointees to the U.S. Supreme Court so quickly that we do not. They all also lied under oath. They all said that Roe was settled law. They said that they wouldn't touch it. And the first time it came before the highest court, Mark, they overturned Roe. So they all lied in their job applications because that's what the U.S. Senate hearings were.
We should have known that they're going to do that in the first place. But this whole thing of accepting any of these monetary gifts at all or any kind of gifts whatsoever, it should be just something automatic to say, I can't take this because I'm a judge in this particular field, I can't accept any gifts, period. And why they don't seem to understand, let alone disclose it, they shouldn't be accepting them in the first place, period.
Well, and there's not any prevention from them accepting them, but the disclosure is the huge part. And reading from the ProPublica piece, the tuition payments add to the picture of how the Republican megadonor has helped fund the lives of Thomas and his family. Quote, you can't be having secret financial arrangements, said Mark W. Bennett, a retired federal judge appointed by President Clinton. Bennett said he was friendly with Thomas and declined to comment for the record about the specifics of Thomas's actions. But he said that when he was on the bench, he was not on the U.S. Supreme Court, just the federal bench, he wouldn't let his lawyer friends buy him lunch. So that was the standard that some federal judges hold themselves to. They wouldn't even let their lawyer friends buy them lunch. But Clarence Thomas has been perfectly fine accepting and disclosing in some cases, but not in all, a range of things from luxury yacht trips to now tuition payments for his grandnephew that he was raising, quote, like a son. Appreciate the phone call, Mark. 844-967-2789. You can share your tangents. You can be like Mark or you can be like Jack up in Merrimack. Jack, what's on your mind today?
Where's the tipping point? Well, in my opinion, there is no tipping point for these guys. They are lifetime appointees. There are no consequences for doing it. And they'll just continue doing what they're doing, and they don't care what the public opinion is. We've seen exactly the same thing in our legislature here. There are no consequences for the egregious gerrymandering because the legislators automatically get bumped back into office, and they make the situation worse, and there is still no consequences. You look at the January 6th and the leaders of that. Even McConnell said, and this is an approximate quote, he said, there is no doubt whatsoever that Trump is morally and physically responsible for the January 6th attempted insurrection. And yet there were no consequences. There have been no consequences for Trump on that particular field. Other people have gotten him into court, but the corruption, there's no consequence for, and so they don't really care. So they're not going to do anything about it. They're just going to stay there, do what they do, take the money, and run.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think that that's the reason why there's very little consequences is because the dark money that is in the system allows these individuals to be funded as well and keep up doing what they're doing. Appreciate the phone call. You can be like Jack or Mark. 844-967-2789. Going to be joined by Annalise Eicher coming up in the next segment. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. We're going to be right back. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, and that sweet, sweet, sultry music can only mean one thing. Yes, it is Yacht Rock season. We're getting very close to Yacht Rock, folks. But we are now joined here on Dueling Tangents by Annalise Eicher. Annalise, how are we doing today?
You know, I'm really feeling the Yacht Rock today, Luke. The weather's finally turning to true Yacht Rock weather. Although I will state, it is a state of mind. It is not dictated by our seasons.
Absolutely.
But thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, I appreciate you being able to join me. I had a feeling that there was going to be some news and want to have you on for with the shared revenue proposal coming out this week to get a chance to talk about that. We've got the lawsuit beginning to go underway here in Wisconsin about the 1849 abortion ban. And so I wanted to have you on to discuss that as well. But it seems like they all perfectly culminated together to be all on one day. So we get to talk about it all at once. So really, really appreciate you joining me on this Thursday afternoon. And popped up, got ready for a show, and boom, I saw the headline. Governor Tony Evers coming to play hardball when it comes to that shared revenue proposal that Republicans released in little stages, kind of. It was a press release at the Capitol, then a press conference in Milwaukee, and now we're finally getting the actual, what is the meat of the proposal 48 hours before it got its first public hearing this morning. Your thoughts on what we got this past week with the shared revenue plan out of the Republicans in the legislature?
Well, I'll start by saying that I fully support the governor's plan to veto the shared revenue plan. I think that the key word for me in shared revenue is the word shared, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sharing I think also conjures cooperation and agreement as well. And, I think the Republicans had conversations with select people and chose to craft a narrative that, you know, their shared revenue plan was something that was, you know, agreed upon and cooperative and that worked for everybody. But, you know, looking at what they put forward, it was some revenue, sure, but they were going to dictate every cent of how we spend that and really not give communities the ability to, you know, drive that shared revenue where we need it the most. It wasn't going to allow for, you know, some of the creative approaches that, we should and can be able to do in local government. So like I said, grateful for Governor Evers. You mentioned, you know, he's coming to play hardball, and he should. I mean, this is his budget. He's put some incredible work into it. Incredible programs. To see the Republicans start the process after hearing from folks across the state about the things that they support, but then, you know, to see the Republicans come in and immediately do the opposite. Strip over 500 items from the governor's proposed budget, change the narrative on what, you know, we're doing with shared revenue, and really go against what so many people voted for last fall. Way to go, Governor Evers. Thank you. Big fan right now.
Hang on here, because the offices of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and State Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu, they say that they took into consideration a multitude of voices. This is the quote from their press release. After several weeks of meetings and negotiations with all parties involved, Democrats, Republicans, towns, villages, cities, and counties, we reached a shared revenue proposal we believe the public will support. Now, that's a very interesting choice of words because they didn't actually include the party that is pretty large in the budget-making process, the governor's office, in that. They say Democrats generically. They don't. I would like to know which Democrats that were consulted by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and State Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu. Because
let's not forget, we have 72 counties.
Mm-hmm.
We have over 1,700 municipalities. You know, did they just pick and choose a few? Like, who all was part of these conversations? Because
it's a very interesting question to ask. Because,
good question.
Yeah, it's a great question. but it just is shocking that they're like, oh, well, for weeks we've been doing that. And pretty much right after re-election, Governor Tony Evers went out on a listening tour, was going into the communities, hearing from Wisconsinites of what they wanted included in the budget, and gave a very, what I believe, excellent starting point for the negotiations. And then, as you pointed out, 545 provisions just in one vote. They didn't actually have any debate around it. There wasn't any conversation about which ones to include or which ones not to include. 545 provisions just stripped out like that, taking the budget down to its studs. And it's just very disingenuous to act like that's the true starting point when the proposal that Evers put up and put together after months of hard work, not weeks, months of hard work is acted like not the starting point. So it is pretty telling that the Evers administration is looking to play hardball. I was curious. He I didn't know how he's going to react yesterday because he was in public. He was asked by a couple of reporters and he was like, well, I haven't got to be fair. The report got released like 24 hours before that. And I don't necessarily do my homework as immediately as it was signed. So I can feel for the governor. But he was asked by reporters, well, what are your thoughts on the shared revenue? He's like, I haven't got a chance to dive into it yet. I'm going to take a look. And it's very disingenuous that the Republicans are like, well, be awfully terrible if the city of Milwaukee just went bankrupt because we couldn't come to an agreement on this, when they're the ones not actually coming to the negotiation table and having an honest dialogue about what to include in this upcoming biennial budget.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting that they've chosen to go that direction since, you know, they, you know, budget after budget after budget, you know, continuously attack the city of Milwaukee and the county of Milwaukee. And, you know, despite Milwaukee being one of our economic engines of the state and being an area of, you know, of growth and creativity. And it's just, it's par for the course. I mean, this is the exact same thing that we have seen and come to expect from the Republicans in the Wisconsin state legislature since, you know, they came to power under terrible maps, you know, a decade ago. And it's, I think, you know, this is just another example of how gerrymandered our state is and that our governor, you know, can win as decidedly as he did and put together this budget that reflects what people voted for and reflects what people have asked for. And reflects what our communities need. And then to have the Republicans just come in and say, no, none of these things, no discussion, no debate, no nothing. We're not even going to talk about it.
Yeah.
This is what we've been seeing for years. And I think just underscores the need for, the need for an even playing field so that Wisconsinites can actually see some benefits from government that discusses and debates.
Yeah, and that delivers, that compromises and then delivers ultimately, because that is what is important. Folks, you are listening to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on a Thursday afternoon by Annalise Eicher. And we're talking shared revenue because it seems like Governor Tony Evers is going to take a stance. The quote that I saw from the Journal Sentinel, Annalise, that indicates how Evers, I think, truly cares about this issue, because it's not something that all of a sudden he started just talking about. It was something that was neglected by Republican lawmakers for the better part of the last decade or more.
Yes.
3 decades almost, if you want to take a look at it. But there was also, it wasn't addressed by former Democratic administrations. But Governor Tony Evers is trying to tackle it. It's something that he wants to solve and address and provide for local governments. And his suggestion, in the quote from the piece, is send me a clean bill that talks about the money that we're going to give to the municipalities. And so I think it's going to be an interesting standpoint now of where we go from here, because it seems like this was going to be included in the budget, but now the governor is requesting that maybe we'll get a standalone clean bill for shared revenue. What are your thoughts? You think this is still going to get tied up into the budget negotiations, or where you think this shared revenue compromise, if there's going to be one, is going to come? Is it going to be a clean or in the budget?
That's a question I don't know the answer to. And I don't know that I can guess at this point, you know, given that the Republicans have taken the stance on the budget that they have, and with the governor indicating his disapproval of what they've pulled together on shared revenue so far. I think shared revenue is due for a lengthy discussion and due for some changes. Because our communities across the state need it and deserve it. And it has been neglected. So I'm curious as to see which way it'll go. And I do hope that the Republicans are willing to come to the table and have a real discussion about what the shared part of shared revenue really truly means in practice.
Yes, we discussed it on yesterday's show. It felt like it was a lot of strings attached to the shared revenue. It came with a lot of expectations and stipulations, is what we were discussing yesterday.
Like, here, we'll give you this money, but this is how you have to spend it.
Yeah.
It's
a very interesting way approach. And I don't understand how, I guess, the Republican lawmakers were going to expect any other different reaction out of the governor's office. Because to me, it made sense from the proposal and the details over the last week that we saw that this was going to be kind of the area that Republicans were forcing the governor's hand to be, because,
yeah,
again, they claim to have worked with Democrats and Republicans and cities and municipalities, all the parties involved, but really, it doesn't feel like we saw any of that. The first public hearing on this proposal was today. They were not taking input on this at the Joint Finance Committee's only 4 hearings around the state of Wisconsin, not one in Madison, not one in Milwaukee. It felt like a rush process, and it felt like a process that was not involving all the parties. And so it's shocking to me that this is the stance after, what is it? Are we at 15 out of the last 18 statewide elections Republicans have lost here in Wisconsin, that they want to take this approach rather than moderating and saying, okay, let's come together. Let's do what, in many regards, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin has displayed over the last 12 years of finding compromise even when you don't agree with everyone. She got more done in the U.S. Senate than Ron Johnson did during the Trump administration. I think Republicans would do really well taking a page out of Tammy Baldwin's book and saying, okay, if we want to win statewide again, maybe we should compromise. Because then you don't have individuals like, I don't know, we're hearing from private talks that Congressman Mike Gallagher is not even interested in seeking higher office in 2024 because there aren't any Republicans to go up against Senator Tammy Baldwin. So it's very shocking to me that we're seeing these statewide results, Annalise, but the Republicans aren't actually coming to the table in good faith. They just want to put out what they want to put out, and they're acting like Evers is the unreasonable one.
Yeah. And I think that's par for the course for Republicans and how they've been acting, both in our federal government, but also our state government, for the last number of years. And it's disappointing. But also, it's not unexpected to me.
Yeah. Folks, you were listening to Dueling Tangents. Another piece of work that, Annalise, you were doing earlier this year was the rallies leading up to our spring election, talking about abortion rights here in Wisconsin and what the Wisconsin Supreme Court race would mean for those. The kickoff of the lawsuit here challenging the 1849 law is now underway. So we're going to dive into that and more on the other side of this break. You're listening to Dueling Tangents. You can join us, share a tangent with us on this Thursday afternoon, 844-967-2789. I'm Luke Mathers, joined by Annalise Eicher on this Thursday. And we're just going to sail for a little bit, you know? It's going to be some nice yacht rock weather. We're having fun. There's going to be soccer games tonight. It's Intergalactic Star Wars Day. One more segment.
May the fourth be with you.
May the fourth be with you. We got one more segment in Dueling Tangents today. Give us a tangent. 844-967-2789. Welcome back to Dueling Tangents. I'm Luke Mathers, joined on a Thursday afternoon by Annalise Eicher. And I always forget how long the Florence and Machine intro takes for this one. There it is. This beat is too catchy. It's going to be stuck in my head the rest of the day now. But I did it to myself. I did it to myself. I requested it from Evan. So, but you are listening to Dueling Tangents across Civic Media. If you want to take us with you on the go, download the Civic Media app wherever apps are downloaded. Just type in Civic Media. It's free. It's easy to download. You can jump from station to station. And Annalise, one of the other things today. So outside of Governor Tony Evers showing that he is dedicated to getting a fair shared revenue proposal through the legislature and signed by his office, taking a stance, hardball stance on shared revenue, threatening to veto it as is right now. But the other news of the day is we had the first hearings on the lawsuit that is challenging Wisconsin's 174-year-old abortion ban. And it's pretty interesting / fascinating, I guess, because I'm a news junkie, Annalise. Like, I'm a sponge for information. I just want to pay attention to it all. And I'm having a hard time keeping track of how this is working and what's going on with it. And I fear that that's what ultimately the conservative movement over the last 40 years wanted when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last summer in its Dobbs decision. It's going to send it back to the states. And essentially, rather than have a federal standard, we now have this patchwork of legality that is questionable. It threw into chaos, legal chaos, all 50 of the states and all of the territories of the United States as well. And so can you help explain what's going on here in Wisconsin for our chaos of this lawsuit that is here in Dane County Court beginning today?
Yes, I am happy to help clarify. We don't do a good job, I think, as a our legal system and our knowledge about our court systems, the number of levels is kind of limited. And, you know, I think you're absolutely correct in by kicking this issue back to the states. You know, there are any number of, legal and legislative issues that have happened over the years that impact rights and access to healthcare like abortion. So what happened today was a Dane County Circuit Court judge heard oral arguments over whether to dismiss the Attorney General's lawsuit challenging the 1849 criminal abortion ban. And so the case that is at hand here that they a certain DA was asking to be dismissed is a lawsuit brought by our Attorney General, Josh Call, that says the 1849 abortion ban was effectively repealed when the state legislature passed new laws regulating abortion in the decades following the Roe versus Wade case. And so the AG says that those newer laws take precedence over the 1849 ban, and then that ban cannot be enforced.
Okay. And then in this process of the oral arguments today, we also then got some comments from this Dane County Circuit judge questioning whether or not that 1849 ban even applies to a individual seeking abortion care, because essentially, it was talking about a definition of voluntary abortion or feticide, essentially. And I'm curious to know, where does that even mean? If those are the judge's comments, I guess it's just even more further confusing to me of what this means for this court case and this lawsuit.
Yeah. So the question, I think, and again, not an attorney. I actively chose not to go to law school, but
same.
My understanding is that the hearing today was about whether or not this case can proceed. My indication was that, based on the judge's comments that, that judge is likely to rule in favor of the attorney general and allow this case to continue to move forward. There's any number of legal arguments that are being made or made in court today that could impact the judge's decision. Thinking about next steps, what's going to happen? I think that sort of we all expect this to go to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which was the huge focus of this last spring, just a month ago even. Mm-hmm. So I think like the if and when as to when this case goes to the Supreme Court is going to depend on whether or not when the Dane County Court decides this case. If the losing party, whether that's the attorney general or the DA that wants this dismissed, appeals the ruling. And then I think the other question that, is out there is, does the Court of Appeals keep the case, or does the case move from Dane County court to the Supreme Court of Wisconsin? And so it's really interesting to see the possibility of whether this could happen tomorrow or next week or later this summer. We're pretty much in a waiting period now to see how and when that Dane County Circuit Court judge is going to rule, which determines where this goes next.
Yeah.
Which determines how we continue to fight for reproductive freedom in the state of Wisconsin. We're talking a lot about the courts, and that's, the subject of the day, but there are also legislative avenues that, we can and should be pursuing. I know certain legislators have already introduced the Restore Roe Act, which is really exciting. But there's a lot that we, can be doing to support access to reproductive freedom and reproductive health care in Wisconsin.
Yeah. And all this legal chaos and the delays and the timeline is all happening while there's Wisconsinites that are not receiving the health care that they may be seeking and forced to go to other states. And so it's absolutely very appreciative that you're able to describe that. I feel a little bit better about the understanding now. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for joining me on this Thursday afternoon, Annalise. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
May the 4th be with you. And good luck tonight with the Battle of Sunny Pea.
Thank you, Luke. And may the 4th also be with you.
Yes, it works out. Folks, you've been listening to Dueling Tangents. If you missed any portion of the show, go check out the podcast. Head over to the website, civicmedia.us. You can click on Dueling Tangents. You can see today's edition of Dueling Tangents and all the previous editions, along with all of the other excellent programming put out by Civic Media. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We're going to be joined by State Representative Francesca Hong. Talk to y'all then.